Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do a review, stick it up here on the podcast feed. Today I finished listening to an audiobook of a book called Hurricane Fever by Tobias Espekel. And yes, this is going to be the review. It's a follow-up book to one that I read and enjoyed in some ways and didn't enjoy in many other ways, called Arctic Rising. And this is kind of like near-future kind of ecological disaster, techno-thriller, spy novel kind of stuff. One of the things that I really enjoyed about Arctic Rising was that it was kind of like a future history, or like a future way of looking at the Arctic in the future, which was very reminiscent for me of, say, Kim Stanley Robinson book, Red Mars and Green Mars and Blue Mars, and also the book that Kim Stanley Robinson wrote, Antarctica. And it's sort of like, okay, what could it be like? Kind of like a more realistic, and it's still an interesting story told, but like bringing in the technology of the future and the different cultural settings and also kind of the geopolitical things. It's like, what do countries want? What do nation states want with Mars or with Antarctica? And this, in Arctic Rising, was like, okay, all of this kind of stuff, but what's happening now in the Arctic. And I was kind of expecting that with Hurricane Fever, again, because it's a follow-up. It follows one of the side characters, one of the supporting characters in Arctic Rising, is back for this one, and he was one of my favorite characters in that book. And it's like, hey, why don't we just take the good stuff from the other book and now do a book with that guy? And it's like, yes, great, I will read that. So it's called Hurricane Fever. It's all set in the Caribbean, and again, it does a similar kind of thing. Okay, what will it be like if when the ice caps melt and when the sea level rises, and when what happens with all these island states, all these islands which are kind of slowly flooding, and the hurricanes are getting worse and they're getting battered by hurricanes? But what can these countries do in the future? Kind of like in Arctic Rising, what can Canada do and the Arctic do and the Greenland do and all these other countries up there, and Norway and Russia? What are they going to do to exploit the new resources that come along, or what can they do to deal with this new frontier kind of area, new frontier Wild West kind of thing? And that's what we kind of get here. There is quite a lot of geopolitical stuff, which I really quite enjoyed, but there wasn't the same feeling as Arctic Rising, because that, like I said, did feel like it's a new Old West. It's like a new frontier. It's suddenly the ice caps recede. There's virgin territory up there. There's new business models. There's new things to find and new ways to live the life. And another like a book like this set like Hurricane Fever, set in the Caribbean, just felt very much like, okay, we've been to the Caribbean many times in fiction. There's lots of movies set in the Caribbean, Pirates of the Caribbean, all the Bond movies, that kind of go with stuff going on in the Caribbean. That kind of exotic lifestyle of going to a hotel and going out and hanging out on the beach. And then, there's poor people around, but then there's rich people and people going along with boats here and flying there and helicopters there, that kind of stuff. I've seen all that before, and that's kind of what we got here. More to the point, while I did quite like the new geopolitics of the region of the Caribbean, like the conflicts that they have over oil and with Venezuela, and then this island is kind of crumbling away and disappearing, but these other islands are becoming more important, and all that kind of stuff, it's there, but it's kind of in the background. The plot, the main plot itself, is disconnected with that. The main plot is like, okay, there's a bad guy who wants something. Does it have anything to do with the Caribbean? Kind of a little bit. Does it have anything to do with the climate change? Kind of a little bit. But all of those things that were kind of informing the world building didn't cross over into the drama of the plot. What was there was interesting. The new technology, the future ideas, there's some really cool science fictional ideas within the book itself. For example, they build the Vern space gun, which is a massive gun which shoots stuff, like you just an explosion, boom, shoots something out of a barrel which is 250 meters long. And you can shoot stuff into space, or most of the way into space. That kind of stuff, all these really fun technological ideas, great, but didn't feel totally connected, like I say, to the plot. But interesting in its own right, and there was some fun history stuff and info dump stuff which did kind of bring back what I liked about Arctic Rising and what I kind of like about this near future thriller kind of geopolitical stuff. All very interesting, but not quite as tied in with the plot as I wanted. What else do I have here? Oh, yeah, so let me talk a little bit of the plot. The plot is, it follows Prudence Jones, or Prudence, shortened down to Rue Jones. And he was part of the, I think it's the Caribbean Intelligence Agency, or Caribbean, I can't remember the exact acronym, the CGI or something, the Caribbean Group Intelligence Agency. And he was up in the Arctic hanging out with, I think, what's his name? Anika, who was in Arctic Rising. But now he retired. He's like, this is set like 8 or 10 years later. And he's down back in the Caribbean. He's got himself a boat. He seems to still have connections to the old spy world, to the intelligence agency world. But really, he's just kind of hanging out by himself. No, not by himself, actually. He's got his nephew is there. Like, he had a brother, and his brother had a kid, and now his brother died in a hurricane, and his sister-in-law, or his sister and brother-in-law, whichever way it is, died in a hurricane, and now he has to look after his nephew. And his nephew is a bit troubled and is hanging out, living with him on the boat. And they're keeping the boat. And then a hurricane comes through and they've got to save the boat. And they go off here. And then he gets one of his friends. Actually, this is the prologue of the book. And in the prologue of the book, another guy who Rue worked with gets into a bit of trouble, dies. Not really a spoiler here. It's pretty much set up at the start. But leaves Rue a load of information in a little kind of USB thumb drive that he picks up. And so because he has this, then that gets him into a big a big multinational corporation, multinational spy agencies, multinational everything, everything worldwide, international stuff. And he gets caught up with that. And so then we just kind of follow him sailing around Caribbean islands, and he's just fucking people over for revenge reasons because, his friend died. And then, to find more information, he goes and beats some people up over here. And then, he gets into saving the world kind of territory, so he goes over there and beats some people up here and shoots people with harpoons there and climbs up buildings and jumps over. It's very kind of James Bondish, like that kind of stuff. And then he's contacted by this mysterious female agent of some kind. You're not quite Katrina. You're like, well, Kit or whatever. Anyways, Kit, you're not quite sure if Kit is a good guy or a good girl, like a hero on the good side or the bad side. And then you're like, oh no, she's on the bad side. Oh no, she's on the good. Oh, like what is she? What is her true identity? How is that going to shake out? And yes, like I say, sailing around the Caribbean islands, getting into trouble, sailing through storms, going to parties, hanging out on the beach, all this kind of stuff. And when I say it's kind of Bond-like, it's actually when I was reading this, I was like, this could just be James Bond, If you could just set it in the future of James Bond, so he kind of retires. Was that in that latest one where he gets shot and retires and he's living in Turkey or something? Yeah, Turkey, because it's set in Istanbul at the start. And he's just on a beach and he's all, a bit past it and not that fit anymore. But he's still got his skills, and he gets caught up in something, and there's cool gadgets, and there's a cartoon villain. Of course, it's like this biotechnology guy, and he's got neo-Nazi skinheads as henchmen. It's very, very black and white. Just like, okay, this person over here, bad person. Why? Well, they've got swastika tattoos. Oh, okay. You can kill that guy. Yeah, no problem and stuff like that. And, he gets beaten up and he chases the girls and, well, it's not so much he chases the girls, but he uses, he charms some women into doing what he wants and there's spy work. And then at the end, there's this whole kind of like, bad guy, showdown, I could kill you now, but instead I'll use this very contrived way to kill you. Yeah, I won't kill you now, I'll give you time to escape or to be rescued, and here's my entire plan. Yes, well, we're at it. And there's a showdown at the end and a chase and a countdown sequence, all that kind of stuff. And this is not a bad thing, because it's quite nice to have something so comfortable. The story is quite simple. But it's like, okay, this audiobook is actually, let me check, it's like 7 hours long or something. It's the perfect kind of length for, okay, here's your main character, he's an action hero, He's good at his job. Let him go around and do this fun stuff. And there's boat chases. And it did feel a bit too much like sometimes, like, oh, I am now reading the description of a movie scene. And this person here, and he looks behind him, he goes here, and there's this thing goes here, and that bit all goes over there. But it's there's I've got no problems with this story. It's like a story that knows exactly what it is. We are doing near future techno thriller, espionage thriller. We're gonna sneak into buildings. We're gonna get the girl. We're gonna beat up the bad guys. We're gonna get beaten up by the bad guys. All that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's quite fun in a way. What else have I got here? No, it's nothing. No, I'm looking through my things. Oh, so the characters. I think Rue is a fine character. I actually quite liked him in Arctic Rising because he was quite mysterious. Like, oh, who's this guy? You know, you want to hang out with this guy. Unfortunately, in this, there is a bit of character development, but not much. There's a little bit of soul searching up until about halfway through or about 2/3 of the way through. And then it suddenly goes, oh, shit, right. We don't have a lot of time. We've got to have some big action at the end. Let's just get on with it and do it. And I would have liked there to be a little bit more interplay with him and Katrina, which, because I thought that was quite an interesting relationship, and it's kind of hinted at that stuff might happen in the future or might not happen in the future. But the one of the problems with this book is that there isn't any of those cool side characters. Like in Arctic Rising, we had the main character, and then there's a character, Rue, and you're like, wow, that Rue guy is interesting and mysterious. But in this book, I can't think of any of the characters in this book where you go, ah, oh, that character was good enough to sustain another novel, or could be good. That no other character is interesting enough to sustain another novel with this guy. And in a way, I kind of want more of Rue, but not as an old guy. I kind of want to, like, back up 10 years. And what was he doing, like, just before Arctic Rising, or just after, well, I guess after Arctic Rising, he kind of retires. But, like, that kind of era, like, when he hasn't quite found his footing, when he isn't quite sure what he's doing with his life and he's not quite as settled down, I could kind of want, you know, some more like early James Bond, younger James Bond rather than older James Bond. I don't know. So yeah, that's pretty cool. Science and technology stuff, pretty good. It's not as outlandish, which is actually good in a way, as Arctic Rising. Arctic Rising got very stupid at the end, and it's quite cool to visit the North Pole, and they're trying to keep the North Pole frozen over to save the few polar bears there. But then when you actually get there, suddenly all this stuff goes off, and these balls flying around, and these clouds of programmed matter, and these things, and there's all this weird stuff. And this book felt very much more down to earth in terms of the technology. There is some cool technology. I really like the gecko gloves and the, you know, some of the marine technology and the electric helicopters. It all feels very real. And there's the good stuff in this book where it's like, oh, okay, so the Caribbean don't have a navy. So how do they defeat Venezuela? And it's like, okay, they used drones, but like, you know, drones with, what is it, IEDs, improvised explosive devices strapped to them. And they flew thousands and thousands of these, or hundreds of these drones out and bombarded the Venezuelan troop carrying ships and did all that kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, that's really cool stuff, like using like current technology or something which feels like only 3 or 4 years in the future. And actually, as I was reading this book, I saw this this blog post that someone linked to, and it's the, I think it's the US Navy is doing trials of is doing. I just got a message from Juliana. She wants me to pick her up. Should finish up this podcast quickly. Yeah, they're doing trials of drone ships. So instead of having like a ship and having lots of small ships following along with it, which is they're all manned, why don't we just do it with, you know, little robot ships? And it feels very, like I say, down to earth in this book. And it's actually really interesting reading about all these new, like, smaller technologies as they come on, unlike Arctic Rising, which was like most of the way through you're like, oh, this is interesting, and then at the end it's like, wow, stupid technology, turn your brain off kind of technology. What else do I have to say about this stuff? Yeah, oh, let me go this way. The reading, I listened to this on Audible. The narrator is called Prentice Onayemi, and he is probably from the Caribbean. Lots of great Caribbean accents in this. Lots of interesting, like the conversations are fun. The dialogue isn't always that great, but the way that the different voices would interplay, he does a good job with that. The book is actually only 7 hours 15 minutes, so it's quite a brisk read or listen. I was actually sent this book by Tobias Espekel. the author, he sent an ebook to, I requested an ebook because I was like, hey, I liked the previous book. I think he's an interesting, he's got an interesting view of the future. Hey, let's check this out. However, the act of reading Tobias S. Buckell's prose and language and his grammar and everything like that is so stressful, let me put it that way. It's so stressful that just to get through the language, I'm just like, how does this happen? And if you listen back to my painfully long episode about Arctic Rising, I went into far too much detail about what was painful about it. You know, small things like not being able to spell words. Like, what do you put a plane? You put a plane in an airport. In an airport, you park the plane in a hangar, and it's spelled H-A-N-G-A-R, hangar. And in that book, it was hangar with an E-R at the end. I'm like, how did the author not catch this? I mean, I know hangar, like a coat hanger, and a hangar, they sound similar, but they're two different words. I was like, and how did the editor not pick up on this? So anyway, if you want to hear a massive rant about bad language on that, go for it. Because I listened to this an audiobook, I didn't pick up on spelling mistakes and all those kind of things, but there's some of the grammar and some of the writing is just so bad that it comes through even as audio. Just like listening to these sentences is really painful. And also, there's sometimes when I notice that, hey, the narrator, what's his name, Prentice Onayemi, I'm thinking, well, he can't pass the sentence enough to read it with a straight face, being able to get through to the end of the sentence, like still knowing what's going on in the sentence. I mean, that my sentence that I just said then was confusing enough, but I didn't write it, and I'm not having to read what I just wrote. It's just awful. And you're thinking, oh, this poor narrator, he's having to make sense of these sentences and then read them as though they make sense, and they don't make any sense. So anyway, while I was listening, I did make a few notes, not so much notes, but when I had my iPad near me, because I had an ebook version in iBooks, so I could just make some notes. For example, there's always this really bad passive voice with Tobias S. Buckell. Like, nobody has people don't do things, they have got them done. It's like, he's got a boat. Rue has got a boat. The electric motor wasn't as fast as the old gas-powered 15-horsepower motor that he used to roar around with. Which is a confusing sentence. Then he goes like this. But he could get this one charged up via the boat's solar power. He could get it charged up. And he's always getting stuff done and going and doing this. He's never just doing it. It's like, he could charge this one up with the solar. But it's like, he doesn't just do it. It's he could get this done. And there's so many times like that as it goes throughout. What's his? I'm looking in different notes. Actually, I didn't make notes. I've just got stuff highlighted here as well. So all of that, like, really, like, super passive voice. Nothing ever happens. Let me see. There's this one here. There's this one thing. Phone calls were made and hasty teleconferences went on in offices. Across the breadth of the Caribbean, it seemed, decisions were being made about Rue's future. And I'm like, how? Like, there is nothing, like, who is doing that? All the time, there's stuff happening, like movement happened, which takes me back to Crystal Rain. It's like, movement happened. That is not a description of anything. Who is making the phone calls? Who is taking part in teleconferences? Like, who are making the decisions? And it's always like this nebulous thing. And that's kind of like an interesting thing, because it's like, oh, there's secret services and there's spies and stuff, and you're never quite sure who is doing it. That's interesting to find out, okay, that's it. But like, so much of the other times, things are just so vague and so passive. It is the passive voice. The water was smooth, mate. He didn't get bounced too much as they skipped over the surface. He didn't get bounced. He doesn't bounce around. It's like he didn't get bounced. So that's interesting stuff. There's also these these really rubbish what am I trying to say? Like, repeated words. So you've got like a sentence, and there's always one of those things. Try not to repeat the same word in the sentence too often. And that this section of a chapter said, "Harbor patrol still blocked the harbor. They could hear a few smaller They could hear a few smaller... This is another section. It doesn't say who they are, so you just got to presume, oh, I'm reading back. I've got to read back a few paragraphs, another section. They could hear a few smaller semi-rigid boats headed up and down the canals leading away from parts of the harbour as security forces tried to hunt for them in the watery fingers reaching deep into Aves. And, like, the other security forces, the harbour patrol. So sometimes he'll change a word and describe something like the car was behind him, the black monster was behind him. And you're like, oh, the black monster is the car. And then he'll come up with other descriptive words for the same object to stop using the same words to describe it over and over again. And then at other times, just repeat it. The harbour patrol still blocked the harbour. And these are only some of the examples that I found, like, that as I was listening within reach of my iPad. But then he was in downtown Rosario, the capital of Dominica. They hadn't taken him away from the island he'd crash-landed just off of. And that's actually a sentence that the narrator had to read, Prentice Moreno had to read, and you could tell as he was reading it, he was like, this isn't a proper sentence. They hadn't taken him away from the island he'd just... Oh, I messed it up. They hadn't taken him away from the island he'd crash-landed just off of. And I don't know, it's one of those things, like, I know it's just the style of the writing. Totally free with it. It's like, okay, we're going to just write how it is. But all the time I'm reading a book, and all the time I'm listening to it, I think there's one final... I've got this one... This is all one sentence, which I heard the narrator really struggle to get to. So he's trying to break into something. The lock to the balcony door yielded to a skeleton key that used brute force algorithms to run through wireless security until it told the door to open itself up with a satisfying click for Rue. Okay, so I'm like, okay, the lock is this, and then it ends up satisfying kick for Rue. So it should be like, Rue used a skeleton key that did this. You know, it's one of those things, like, it's like, where is the, what is the subject? What is the object? How is this sentence all one sentence? I'll try it again. Okay, the lock to the balcony door yielded to a skeleton key that used brute force algorithms to run through wireless security until it told the door to open itself up with a satisfying click for Rue. Did the skeleton key really tell the door to open itself up with a satisfying click? Because there's no punctuation in this sentence, so that's actually what it's doing. It's saying, hey, door, open up with a satisfying click. What does a satisfying click look like? Well, sound like, well, you know, Rue knows what would say. Anyway, it's just all the time. So the language in this book is absolutely terrible. However, the story is fun, very uncomplex. It's the opposite of complex. The characters are not very complex. So it's this bubblegum. Normally at the end of the book, at the end of the review, I talk about, well, what are the themes? And I was like, well, yeah, like, racism towards black people is bad, yeah? And, like, you know, global warming is bad and climate change is happening, you know? But in the end, what this book is around is like, hey, cool stuff in the future. Here's some cool technology. Here's some cool spy shit. Here's some fun characters beating people up and shooting people and getting revenge for all this kind of stuff. And that's really what the book is about. It's total bubblegum stuff. It's like a Bond movie. No, like, pretentious Bond movies, like, oh, this is a Bond movie about growing old, and this is a Bond movie about oil, and this is a Bond, what's a Bond movie? Oh, it's about the dangers of thermonuclear war. Oh, this is a Bond movie about the dissolution of the Soviet Union. It's really not about all of that. It's really, you want a showdown with a bad guy, you want a Bond girl, you want some fun action, you want people getting shot and chasing around and driving cars into things and boats into things and boats into other boats and helicopters into boats and all submarines into car washes, all these different kind of stuff. That's actually what we're looking at here in this book. So after all of that, this book knows what it is. It's a kind of like an old-fashioned spy thriller, techno espionage, near future ecological thriller, and it does it pretty well. If you aren't expecting much and you have got just a blind eye to appalling writing and terrible grammar. So I'm going to give it 2.5 stars because it's good. It's okay. It's okay. It's an okay book. 2.5 stars. Pretty average. But I actually, while I was listening to it, I was, you know, I was engaged enough. I enjoyed it. okay. Let me put it that way. It's not a high recommendation, but if you read it, you'd, unless this review has somehow set the expectations really high, which I don't think it has, I think you'd enjoy it. And it's out, it's a pretty new book, it's just out on Audible a few weeks ago. That's why I picked it up, because I saw it came out there. I guess it's available as ebooks and other stuff as well. That's it. For the review, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email. You can also chat with other SFBRP listeners and collude among yourselves to get me to read books that you want. So check out the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com, and there's a thread there called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed, and if enough people chime in on the same book, I will get to it. I think Jack Vance has come up, and I've read quite a bit of Jack Vance in the past, but I will get back to it. Probably do The Dying Earth or one of those kind of series, or at least one or two of the books from Dying Earth. I'll revisit that. Become my friends on goodreads.com. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. And I think that's about it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.